Well, first, I want to thank Barry, Charlie, Werner, and Chris for giving very clear and lucent presentations, and also in a timely fashion, so that we actually have time to engage this. Now, the title actually is the future of HL7, but obviously we mostly are speaking of RIM, and I will let obviously the group decide whether those things are coterminous or not. Obviously, there are issues that came out. This is a work in progress, frankly, I guess just like life, as far as that goes. It has its imperfection, but it's living in the arena, and it's quite voluntary and global. But there are issues, implementation issues, usability issues, scope, documentation, learnability, marketing, and actually I'd also say at some level funding too. If in fact this is at this point largely an essential dialogue and yet pretty underfunded, to put it mildly. Okay, so what I'd ask, if you would please, as we get into the dialogue, as you speak, identify yourself, please speak up because we don't have a mic, please speak briefly, and either ask a question or make a comment. Yes, sir. Oh, okay, that's all right. Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
God, I'm shaking.
In fact, if you want to form a queue on either side so we don't have so much time between questions, that would be useful.
Wow, what a big group. Now I don't know what to say. I'm Jason Siegel. I'm a software architect and physician. I work for a company called Atlas Development Corporation. And to correct, just to inform this gentleman, we have right now operating in deployment a RIM-derived database. I took the HL7 version 3 RIM and used it as a logical model. It's deployed in northern, in California counties. It will be deployed in Wisconsin, the whole state, and it's all based on RIM. And I've had no problems taking any concept, including field nursing, TB medication, plans, profiles, the whole bit, and fitting it in the RIM. I mean, after all, with four general classes, you could. Our joke around work is we could do an automobile sales company in the RIM. And without sounding too insulting, I guess it's almost an intelligence test because you can model diseases, disease plans, disease profiles, pathological processes. So my comment is just to update you, not sales, that it is deployed, it is functioning. The people that use the functionality don't care about the infrastructure, just the GUI. But one of the results, and the things I'm grateful for, and maybe you want to comment on it, is I have to do minimal database updates because every questionnaire is itself an act. And all the individual questions are then components of that act, and I never have to add new tables or attributes anymore. So it does have some positive things.
Okay.
Someday I'll give a lecture on how to build a database based on the RIM. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Comments?
Before you go, can you tell me how you coded TB?
Oh, wow. TB, well, there's a lot of ways. That's what you're saying is the problem. TB is one of our biggest forums, especially in California, the first deployment. TB is it's an act whose top-level class is observation. Under observation, I can tell you right now, I can see in my head, is condition. TB is a condition.
Hang on, there is no room in the RIM for condition.
Yes, there is. In fact, there's an act class called condition.
Conditions are acts.
They're
a special kind of act.
They're a special kind of observation.
So when you acquire the disease TB, you acquire an act of observation.
It's a way of rethinking. It's a paradigm shift. It's like going from standard relational to object oriented. It's a paradigm shift. It's an observation. You know, it's like what?
Why don't you mind taking a seat? So let's have you.
So there's a really important pragmatic concept here, which Barry, you and I have talked about privately, and I don't suspect we're going to resolve it now, and that is not the philosophical notion of TB, but the fact that in a healthcare environment, if we say someone has TB as a condition, then it is an observation. Someone has observed it. We know that it occurred. TB is there. The patient observed it. Someone observed it. If you're saying, I need to know about TV in advance so that I can observe it, we can also code that. There's a representation for that. It's not necessarily the only representation. It is a consistent representation. And I know you don't accept that, but it's a fact.
So we have a philosophical divide, at least. Next one.
I'm Ira Kellett, University of Washington, and also the co-author of a DICOM implementation. So I am with Chris. I'm very pragmatic. So I have a question about something Chris said, which was that you opined about the consequences of any large software project being subjected to philosophical scrutiny, presumably of the kind that Barry and colleagues have done. So I wanted to ask about DICOM, since it got mentioned, and it's a large software project for sure. What speculations could you make about what would happen if we subjected DICOM to the same kind of software scrutiny, philosophical scrutiny?
Ira, thank you. Barry, we'll just go down the row. Or who else?
No, you didn't look at DICOM, so I don't know.
So I looked at DICOM very, very cursorily, and I don't believe that what I'm doing is philosophical. So I'm not like any other philosopher if it is philosophical. I think that DICOM is massively overcomplicated. But I don't see the problems which I've seen in the RIM from the very first day that I looked at even just one page of the documentation. These are not just philosophical problems. These are all kinds of practical problems which have manifested themselves in the sheer pain which software developers attempting to implement the RIM around the world have reported.
Unless there's other comments, I'd like to ask Barry how he would fix it, because I didn't quite see a clear fix before we take the next question, just a prerogative of the chair. Because we're talking about the future, basically.
So the first thing is probably the most important thing. Fix the marketing. Stop claiming that this is an ISO standard. Governments like ISO standards. They think that if they just put an ISO standard in a large hospital system, then the large hospital system will work. That's what happened in England. And in England, billions of dollars have been wasted because because the software developers can't make the thing work. They have to make HL7 and SNOMED compatible with each other, and they are not able to do it. HL7's problems are part of that problem. And the marketing is, it's hype, and this hype is dangerous. And if there are problems going from design to implementation, then don't claim that the result is an ISO standard. Until you have demonstrated that it is implementable in a serious, large-scale way, then claiming that it's an ISO standard is dangerous.
A little factoid. Many ISO standards are abstract specifications. I say that as convener of an ISO standards development working group and as incoming U.S. chair of the delegation to health informatics. The issue of whether or not it's an ISO standard is a red herring. The whole question is really whether there are pragmatic bases that can be reconciled. And with respect to the SNOMED HL7 difficulties, which I think everybody on the planet acknowledges, but that was the focus of my characterization of the TerminFO document and the TerminFO project itself, which is a good faith, diligent effort to reconcile some of those semantic inconsistencies.
Next comment or question?
Cecil Lynch, University of California, Davis, and as a disclaimer, one of the co-chairs of the HL7.
Speak up even more.
One of the co-chairs of the HL7 Vocabulary Technical Committee, and really what I wanted to address was just an agreement with Barry that we should cut out the hype, and so as part of cutting out the hype, I do want to say that unless we consider the Food and Drug Administration and all pharmas that submit drugs in the United States who are required to submit their product labeling in a HL7 version 3 specification, that I think that the characterization of the FDA as a toy application is probably incorrect.
Okay.
So, when I say that the HL7 RIM is unimplementable, or when I say that I fear that the HL7 RIM is unimplementable, I'm talking about large-scale systems that are going to work, for instance, electronic health records across whole countries. What you're talking about is a system for labeling constraint.
Actually, it's a system that the FDA says is meant to drive decision support systems that are being made through the Food and Drug Administration.
And does it?
Well, it is quite clear if you stick to the way that HL7 carves up the world,
now you will get only wrong decisions. But I know what is happening, and I also understand the gentleman who made the database there. If the systems really work in the way that you say, that's because you made a sensible reinterpretation of what the RIM is. And then you forgot about the fact that a disease is an observation. Then you have put somewhere diseases somewhere in a model where they really can be identified as diseases. And the same will happen with the thing for the FDA. I mean, there is no room in the RIM, as you, if you read, for molecules. Because I would classify them as entities, but there is, in strictly speaking, no sense, no place to do that. You can only do it in an act, or you can do it in a document. Well, I hope in the world that you are doing, then you have
that's
to show.
True.
Okay, show
that's
me where
not
it is.
True. You can call an entity, you can call a molecule an entity if you only want to talk about that. You only need to talk about it in the context of act if you want to attribute it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can call a molecule a physical entity. That's what you want to do.
That's an improvement. I agree. That's an improvement.
It's only been there 4 years, so you know,
okay.
You're a little behind on
the
versions.
But anyway, so it's the reinterpretation that I think, and as of advice for the future, I think that from an educational point of view, it would indeed be very important that those guys, such as you and such as that gentleman over there, share their expertise on how they do the reinterpretation. And then I hope that once the guy who thought to have had a bright idea that everything is an act, finally we'll see that not everything is an act.
There is no statement that says...
Charlie, just one second. What I'd like to do, instead of taking more questions at the moment, is give our speakers an opportunity to respond not only to the first round of presentations, but also what's happened. So, Charlie, go ahead. Start at that end, and we'll work on up this way.
There is nothing in V3 that says everything is an act. If everything was an act, we wouldn't need participation and role and entity. Everything isn't an act.
Do you have other comments from the first round of presentations, Charlie?
Yes, I'm sure that everything is not an act. There are entities. Do you talk about entities? There are systems, for instance, credentialing and privileging systems, which care deeply only about entity and role. They don't really actually care about act. Okay, role is capability, capacity, competency. HR systems care about entities and roles. Okay, HL7 learned about entities and roles not by inventing it, because people who knew HR showed up and said, oh, this is how we model entities and roles. It's not true that everything is an act. It's just...